This episode sponsored by Forkful. Most meal delivery services promise healthy food, but look closer and you'll often find cheap industrial seed oils hiding in the ingredients. Forkful does things differently. Forkful delivers chef-prepared meals made with premium ingredients you'd expect at a great restaurant, from center-cut filet mignon to wild-caught lobster mac and cheese. And every meal is 100% seed oil-free. Instead of canola or soybean oil, Forkful chefs cook with extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and grass-fed butter, because better fats make better food. Meals arrive fresh, never frozen, with clear nutrition and ingredient transparency, so you always know exactly what you're eating. Restaurant-quality meals, real ingredients, no seed oils. Discover Forkful today at ForkfulMeals.com.
It's cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft, perfectly warm, thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit MinkyCouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, we're chatting with reality stars Peppermint, who you may know from RuPaul's Drag Race, The Traitors Season 2, and other shows, as well as Frankie Grande, who has been on 3 seasons of Big Brother, Worst Cooks in America, and more. He is also Ariana Grande's brother. And they both wrote an open letter together in collaboration with GLAAD calling for a reality check on reality TV when it comes to representation for the LGBTQ plus community. It's signed by a ton of major names like Nicole Byer, Alan Cumming, Raquel from Roni, Sandra Diaz from Survivor, Alana Glazer, Taylor Hale, Bob the Drag Queen, Derek Lavasser, Jazz Jennings, Margaret Josephs, Amrit from Family Karma, Megan King Edmonds, T.S. Madison, Meredith Marks, Elliot Page, Phaedra Parks, Christian Siriano, Bevy Smith, Chrishell Stouts, Michelle Visage, Sheree Whitfield, Peter Weber, and more. And here's the official summary of what they're kind of fighting for, what they're trying to raise awareness for in this letter. GLAAD says, as proud members of the LGBTQ community, Peppermint and Frankie Grande are pushing for a reality TV landscape that reflects the vast diversity of the LGBTQ lives. They highlight how LGBTQ individuals have historically been reduced to stereotypes or singular storylines that fail to capture the richness of the community's experiences. Peppermint, who gained recognition on The Traitors, also reflects on how she strives to show the world that trans people are more than just one-dimensional characters. Representation must go beyond casting. Behind the scenes, support for the LGBTQ cast members is crucial, ensuring that they can survive and show their authentic selves on screen. Together, let's create a future where every LGBTQ person is seen, heard, and valued. So we chatted all about that letter. We chatted about their experiences on reality TV and some really interesting anecdotes, honestly, about the behind the scenes of conversations that they have had, both at kind of advocating for themselves and for the community. We talked about why there tends to be just one queer person on reality casts so many times. And we just had a great conversation. They're really insightful. They really feel very passionately about this, and as do I, honestly. And there's a petition that you can sign to make your voice heard as part of this effort at glad.org/reality TV, where you can also read their entire open letter to the reality TV community. So before we get to that chat, some big news took over the Bravo world yesterday ahead of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills season finale. Garcelle Beauvais announced that she's leaving the show after 5 seasons with a video posted to Instagram. First of all, she looked gorgeous in this video, I have to say. She said, "So I have some news. I've decided to leave Beverly Hills. It's been a wild ride. I mean, some amazing things have happened and some hard things have also happened, but it's been a ride nevertheless. One of the reasons why I'm leaving is my family, my boys. Their last year of high school is next year, and I want to be part of that. And Jade is starting a new career, and I want to be part of that too. And secondly, I have the most exciting projects that I'm developing, producing, and acting in. I can't tell you anything right now, but you'll know soon." She also thanked Andy, Bravo, NBCU, Evolution, 32 Flavors, the producers, the crew, and of course, the ladies, she said. Andy Cohen says, "I can come back anytime. The door will always be open, so you never know. I might pop back in sometime." She also thanked fans of the show and viewers. She said, "You guys have cheered me on, supported me, and sometimes even fought for me or on my behalf. It means a lot, and I hope you guys will continue on this journey with me. It's not goodbye. It's see you later." So, see you later. So just a little reminder, Garcelle made history as Beverly Hills' first Black cast member. With that came immense pressure and expectations. And I think, personally, that she embraced those expectations and that pressure with grace, with bravery, with intelligence. I think with like fun and flair, too. She always was having a good time, it seemed. She also sparked important conversations about race on the show. And I think it rarely felt really heavy-handed. And I also don't think that she allowed that to define her time on the show, which I also think was great and important. And also, like, she came into this with an established career, too. And we always talk about how, like, the rich women on these shows are the ones that don't need it. And that can sometimes make for the best housewives. They aren't even in it for the paycheck. There's less desperation there. And that kind of frees them up, I think, on camera. And I think with Garcelle, she brought that idea of not needing the show, but in a slightly different lens. Not necessarily from a financial perspective, overtly, but more in terms of, like, the state of her career after decades in Hollywood. Like, she was doing just fine. She didn't need the show, but there's no question that once she did join the show, once she, at least for her first three or four seasons, she was definitely a fan favorite. And I kind of think that through the season, she remained a fan favorite for a lot of people, including myself. But I think through that time, she embraced it, she leaned in. And there's no question that, again, her career didn't necessarily need the show, but it absolutely benefited from the show. I mean, she milked this opportunity for all that it was worth, and kudos to her for that, in my opinion. She's gotten so many more opportunities. She's producing all these projects. She has definitely increased her profile in the public sphere again. She injected herself back into the zeitgeist, and she just made the most of this whole experience in a way that I think that everybody could. I mean, not everybody comes in with such an elevated profile as she already had, but, like, she has really turned this into so many different opportunities, and that's why she's also able to walk away from it and why some other people are not. And I also think it's important to say that she never felt to me like she was above the show. I think sometimes women come in, it feels like stunt casty, or they've had careers before and it feels like they are sort of, they have this air about them that they don't need to be there and they don't want to be there. But Garcelle never had that to me. I feel like once she signed up for Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Garcelle leaned in. She was fully in there. She was mixing it up, stirring the pot, doing all the things that you have to do that the job calls for, because she's a professional and because she knows that this is a job and she was doing what the job called for. And I just don't think she was above doing any of that. And I think that that was really important for her success on the show. And then speaking of Garcelle's time on the show, like, she was a huge pot stirrer and she asked the questions that we all wanted answers to. And at a certain point, just as it has with Sutton within this season during filming, so it kind of, I think it kind of hit a wall for Sutton a little earlier, and probably because she's a little bit less adept at it, because she does it more conspicuously than Garcelle does. Their asking of questions to the group and constantly prodding at other people's scandals and controversies, that was always going to cause friction with them. It always was. And I think that, you know, they never fully changed it up. Until the end, they were asking questions about other people's lives. And again, we can't not acknowledge the fact that, like, these are the questions that we were wanting answers to, whether it pertained to Erica or Kyle or Dorit. Like, they were asking these questions, and that made them unpopular with the group. But I think that because they had each other, they sort of felt supported in doing that. And they also knew they had a lot of the audience because of that too. And I also think that because they never fully changed it up, that is also why I have felt, even as anecdotally online this season, that the audience has turned more on her than they ever had before. Like, it kind of felt like the tides were turning on the sort of public opinion about Garcelle in terms of the fans of the show overall. I'm not talking about everybody. I'm talking about sort of like anecdotally from friends watching the show or people that I know, or just people online talking about the show, there was more criticism of Garcelle this season. That being said, like, a common log line against Garcelle is that she never had any storyline. She was always asking questions about other people's lives, but what was she really sharing? And it's like, Garcelle has had storylines on this show. Many of them. Were they always scandalous or controversial or at the level of some of her other castmates that were making headlines in the tabloids and things? No. Did she let us in on her dating life very much? No, not really, which also I think brings some actually warranted criticism to Garcelle. I think that, like, that was the one sort of blind spot in what we saw from her on the show. But this season alone, we've gotten positive updates on her son, Oliver, and her grandchild. Her beach house was unveiled. She's producing a lot. She's acting a lot. We saw her working. Whether you like it or not, that is personal storyline. Again, does it stack up in terms of this sort of salaciousness and sort of the amount of tea it can bring to the show that the other women have? No, it doesn't. But that is personal storyline. So saying that she didn't have personal storyline is bullshit. Again, you might not have been interested in it and you may have wished it was more dynamic, but it was there. She also, to me, like, I remember her being a huge defender of Denise Richards. She was a great friend to Denise. Her friendship with Sutton, I thought for a very long time, was really fun over the years. I loved seeing her take it to Rinna. She had her foot on Rinna's neck and she took it to her. And because of that, she was integral in sort of the dismantling of the Fox Force 5. I thought that she was great in the season that was mostly about Erica's whole situation. Like, she was asking those questions, again, that we all wanted answers to. To me, Garcelle was just a force to be reckoned with. She's an absolute star. I had the pleasure of interviewing her a couple times during her time on the show virtually. And then I met her at the second BravoCon and she was absolutely lovely and just like a radiant person. And so I'm going to miss her on the show. That being said, it was time. I think that she's reading the room by making this decision. I think the audience, again, was seemingly turning on her. I think the cast was perhaps souring on her in a bigger way. She was having this friction with Sutton all of a sudden. And to me, that all pointed to actually the next season for her, if she had stuck around, not being great. I think that maybe her and Sutton's friction would become something bigger. I think it maybe would have been a Garcelle takedown season. I think the audience would have perhaps turned on her even more. And in my opinion, why not pull yourself out before that all happens? She is still pretty much on top. She is very much beloved still by a lot of people. She's still a star. Her has not been tarnished. So I think this is the perfect time to go out. And also, as we've discussed on the show previously, it also felt like her personal story arc where she has this beach house. Oliver's life seems a much more steady. She has this grandchild. Her sons are kind of stepping into the next phase of their lives. Her career is booming. That to me is like a great ending to this arc that she's had on Beverly Hills. I really do think that. And there's something to be said, again, about recognizing that it's time, making that difficult decision, and then pulling yourself out of the equation before things turn. It's graceful, and I think it's admirable. And it's also just easier said than done. I mean, not everybody does it, as we all know. A lot of people overstayed their welcome on Real Housewives for a variety of reasons, because they are too in the weeds, because they can't see the forest from the trees, because they have not diversified their career enough like Garcelle has. Some people are completely dependent on the show financially, or just for attention and sort of, you know, claim to fame. And honestly, I think there's no shame in that. But I think the way that Garcelle has done this is the much more advisable way to approach being on Real Housewives. And hey, even though I don't suspect we'll see her back on the show as a Real Housewife ever again, the door is clearly open. And so you never know. So Garcelle announces this at 9 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday. And there are a lot of celebrity reactions in the comments, a lot of Bravo stars reacting in the comments. Andy commented, he said, an incredible run for an incredible human. Bravo. He also posted it on his Instagram stories. And then, not to be too online, but I'm sorry, I think it is very noticeable that the only person from the show to comment or acknowledge her exit all day for 8 hours was Jennifer Tilly, who is the newest person and a friend of the show. She wrote, "Oh my God, Garcelle, we will really miss you. You brought so much integrity and warmth and humor to the franchise." And then she also posted a photo of herself with Garcelle and Sutton. And she said, "End of an era. Godspeed, Garcelle. You are a bright light on Housewives and you'll be missed terribly. Much love." So again, that was the only acknowledgement of Garcelle's exit from the show for most of Tuesday. Sutton, about 8 hours later, posted a really adorable photo with Garcelle of her looking at Garcelle as she sort of strikes a pose. I think it's from this latest cast trip to St. Lucia. And she wrote, "Friends forever, hashtag RHOBH, Lucy and Ethel." Super cute, very to the point, very succinct. I think notably so. She also commented on Garcelle's video and she said, "Congratulations on your next chapter. Can't wait to see what's up your sleeve. Nothing but greatness. This I know." So I'm sorry, I do think that it's noticeable that it took her 8 to 9 hours to acknowledge this on social media. And what she posted was very succinct and simple. "They have been the thickest thieves on this show for like 4 to 5 years. It's huge news. Like, this is a major cast member leaving your show. That's not something that you just miss because you're not on your phone all day because you're busy." You know what I mean? Like, that is not acknowledging that publicly because they know how this works. They know fans will read into that. That says something. And it also, it's telling that she's not, you know, her post was not very effusive. I feel like this is not, it's not very them. You know what I mean? It's very restrained. And to me, my read on it is that Sutton was not sure how to address this all day because something happened at the reunion or they aren't on the best of terms. Maybe this wrinkle that we're seeing at the end of the season is lasting longer than we're realizing. We see in the trailer that Garcelle storms out of the reunion over something, and the speculation is that it has something to do with Sutton, who we know she was having speed bump with again on the St. Lucia trip. So to me, something is up with them. But I also think that by posting it, by commenting it, they are signifying that they'll eventually get through whatever rough patch this is. But still, I think reading into this as being like, you know, quote unquote, too online or making something out of nothing is bullshit. I think that this does signify something to me. It really does. And again, none of the other women have commented on Garcelle's post or acknowledged her exit on social media. That is unusual. I am sorry. Like, that is not how this usually works. We have seen many women announce their exits from the show. We have seen many women comment on those posts almost immediately, sending them good wishes and wishing them well and wishing them good luck in the future. Garcelle's getting none of that from her co-stars. I don't want to be conspiracy minded. I don't want to have that conspiracy brain. And we'll probably get a clue from Bose and Erica on Watch What Happens Live tonight as I'm recording this, last night as you're listening to this, because they're going to be on after the finale. So that will give us a clue. I'm sure they'll talk about it in terms of where they stand. But the reunion is suddenly much more interesting to me. And as I recorded this intro, you guys, the reunion trailer dropped. So I stopped recording and then came back. So we got the reunion trailer. The notable things as they pertain to Garcelle to me are Erica telling her that Garcelle is just not that interesting. And that's why I guess she doesn't have that much personal storyline. And then they're talking about Garcelle questioning Dorit's robbery again. And she had insinuated that PK had something to do with it during filming this season early on. And the word on the street is that that portion is something they go hard on Garcelle over. And to be honest, that's not deserved. By Garcelle bringing this, again, sort of conspiracy thing up that has been floating around social media, it's kind of an open speculation on social media. But that is taking that speculation and giving it credence by putting it on the show on camera. And that was never going to be a winning battle for Garcelle. There's nothing to back it up. It's completely conspiracy. It's complete speculation. Whether you want to believe that or not, bringing it up on the show, that's not something that anybody else was going to co-sign. It wasn't. Even Sutton didn't co-sign that. I feel like she just sort of like shook her head and laughed or whatever when Garcelle brought it up. But like, that's a toughie, and that's tough to defend. And so it doesn't shock me that they would go hard on her over this. And then we see her storm out and she says, "I'm so fucking sick of it." And then back in her trailer, already changed out of her gown, she's telling somebody off camera, "I can't be friends with these people. I don't trust them. They're all fucking assholes." And so seeing this trailer, it's sort of like, I guess I don't blame them for not commenting on her Instagram post, because clearly things did not end well between them all. Again, I think it would have been a classy thing to do if one of them had just like commented a heart. It's not that hard to do that. And it's a little bit petty, I would say. But, you know, we like our housewives petty. So who am I to, you know, beggars can't be choosers. But listen, like I do, at the end of the day, I think Garcelle had a great run. I think she's making the right call for herself. She was clearly sort of fed up with all of this. And it's better to pull yourself out when you're fed up than to kind of keep trugging along. You know, I mean, I think we've seen that with even some people on her cast. I feel like Kyle has been fed up for a couple of years now, but she keeps trudging along on the show. And it's like, pull yourself out, you know, like make that call. It's a difficult decision, especially if you're somebody who's been on for so long. But like, 5 seasons is nothing to be ashamed about. I think it's a great run as a housewife. I really fell in love with Garcelle on the show, and it was time. And the show boosted her career again after decades in the entertainment industry. And I hope her and Sutton figure out whatever to me is very clearly going on between them, and they prove that this is not just an alliance but a real friendship. I hope there's a chance that we see Garcelle back, but I also just kind of hope that she remains booked and busy. And I look forward to following along with all of that. Of course, this is all making the wheels spin in my head over what Beverly Hills should do after this season in terms of the cast, but I'll save that for another episode. So for now, enjoy my chat with Peppermint and Frankie Grande all about their call to arms regarding LGBTQ+ representation on reality TV. Read their letter and sign the petition at glad.org/reality TV if you also want to see better representation for the community on reality TV going forward. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll be back on Friday. I want to gab.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
This episode sponsored by Forkful. Most meal delivery services promise healthy food, but look closer, and you'll often find cheap industrial seed oils hiding in the ingredients. Forkful does things differently. Forkful delivers chef-prepared meals made with premium ingredients you'd expect at a great restaurant, from center-cut filet mignon to wild-caught lobster mac and cheese, and every meal is 100% seed oil-free. Instead of canola or soybean oil, Forkful chefs cook with extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and grass-fed butter, because better fats make better food. Meals arrive fresh, never frozen, with clear nutrition and ingredient transparency, so you always know exactly what you're eating. Restaurant-quality meals, real ingredients, no seed oils. Discover Forkful today at ForkfulMeals.com.
All right, today we're gabbing with Peppermint and Frankie Grande, who just published an open letter calling for a reality check on LGBTQ representation on reality TV in partnership with GLAAD. I love this cause, and I'm very excited to get into it with both of you, Frankie and Peppermint. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for having us. I'm doing great.
We're so stoked.
Sparkly. We're stoked.
Yeah.
Pep and I have been working on this for so long. It's like so exciting that we're finally able to like come and talk to people about it. And it's been a cause that's near and dear to our hearts. So I'm yeah. Stoked. Yeah. Very excited.
It's been at least a year in the making.
And really?
You know, it was a chance sort of conversation because we had both been last year we had both come back recently from filming, you know, some reality mm-hmm. competition shows, and you know, we were, you know, just kind of dishing the tea, but like, you know, unloading a little bit, and we both shared a lot of the same feelings and frustrations. While I think we're both very grateful for what reality competition has and reality television in general has contributed and given to both of us, mm-hmm. we had quite a conversation.
Yes. I'm sure. And so it really came from you two together, this whole idea. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was great because I looked at the composition of the board at GLAAD and I was like looking at this and, you know, like me and Peppermint are just such prime examples of LGBTQ plus success on reality TV, but for representation, but also like, it was just, we were talking about it and I was like, wow, it's also such a flawed system still. Like it is, yeah. We are the exceptions to the rule that we were able to break through in the ways that we did. And I think, you know, it's just interesting because I went back to Big Brother with a 10-year gap in between. And it was just so interesting having played the show twice and still been the only LGBTQ plus member both times, all three times, actually, if you can count Celebrity in the UK as well. Again, the only LGBTQ plus member in the house. And it's just like, wow, I've played three times over 10 years and the formula is exactly the same. And I think it's broken now.
It's almost been like a forgotten about aspect of getting with the times, basically, and representation mattering. And so I feel like I just want to read like the what I feel like is almost like the thesis of the letter. Hmm. You say, while we've made impressive strides in LGBTQ visibility over the decades, the fact remains that for far too long now, reality shows too often include just one LGBTQ storyline or depend on a single LGBTQ cast member to represent an entire community of individuals and experiences. Mm-hmm. So obviously, I'm guessing towards the beginning of both your reality TV careers, you sort of notice that. For you, Frankie, it was when you went on Big Brother again and you didn't notice any change. Peppermint, when did you notice that?
I mean, certainly my own experiences informed this.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so much about reality television in general that I would say 90% of whatever goes on with reality TV is either the opposite or at least not shown to, you know, to everybody. I think I realized in terms of like the disparity in, you know, LGBTQ people versus non, I mean, I remember the moment like I remember being overjoyed and celebrated seeing one queer person, one gay person on a TV show and feeling like, well, we won the world.
Right.
That's my
life. Right.
And I remember having that feeling. And then I would have that feeling again if I would see another one. And then I'd have the same feeling again. And then 30 years later, because I had that feeling back in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
So 30 something years later, we're still with the same model, as Frankie mentioned. It hasn't changed. It's the same one of them on maybe, you know, I mean, we're just to the point now where they will sometimes put more than one person of color on the thing, you know? And so we haven't gone very far. And, you know, that was, I don't have that much experience with reality TV as a contestant. Certainly not more than as a viewer. I watch plenty of it. But,
but that's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, hello.
Exactly.
And so lies the point. Like, we are the viewers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We are the viewers. There it is. And so when I went and filmed, I mean, obviously doing Drag Race was very different because that was very specific. Everybody was, you know, it was like,
everybody
it was a different kind of thing.
Queer of some sort. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yep.
But doing Traitors, which is, you know, a very mainstream show. Not that Drag Race isn't mainstream, but like from the get, like Drag Race is something that I think it started niche and felt more sort of like underground and then obviously became like a juggernaut.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the Traitors is something that was meant specifically for like the basic
the
audience.
Yeah, the
basic
the basics.
Okay, okay.
And, you know, and so I knew it was a great opportunity. And I'd even had these conversations with producers like, this is a really good opportunity. This is not the normal Drag Race crowd. If anything, the Drag Race audience will be able to be introduced to something. And that's true. When I was on, when Bob was the drag queen was on this season, there's so many people that I was watching and saying, oh, I watched for the first time. I didn't watch before, even though the show had been on as in America beforehand and internationally for a few seasons. And so, yes, putting a Drag Race contestant on will bring Drag Race viewers. They know that. That's why they do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize just how cutthroat it was because on Drag Race, we're all working towards the same thing. And we're all like, we're all sisters. Like, yes, you might have a better performance than me, but like, oh, your corset isn't good. I'll help you zip it. Like there's that camaraderie. And I was foolishly expecting that something like that could happen behind the scenes at the Traitors, and it didn't. And so that's when I realized, oh, this is tough. I'm the only one here. I feel like an outsider. Oh, there's five people from this show, five people from that show. Oh, I'm going to go try to talk to them. Oh, no, they're already talking to each other. So I guess I'll just sit here alone. And that was my experience.
And it's one thing to feel that isolation, but then it affects your gameplay, it affects your time on it. It affects how you're able to even do on the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we're instantly
like, right.
It's interesting because when I did Big Brother this most recent time, before I went in, there was someone who came in to speak to me about DE&I, and we're talking about, you know, how in reality TV, when you walk into a room, you look for mirrors. You look for people that look like you, that are part of your community, to immediately glob onto, because that's an instant alliance. That's something that you can absolutely do to. And he was speaking to it from a place of people of color. And I ended up being on a show with about five or six people of color. And I said to him, I was like, have you ever thought about this as it applies to the LGBTQ plus community? And he was like, no.
Really?
And I was like, yes, because I
person didn't think about it.
Did not. No, he did not. And I said to him, I said, because I guarantee you, when I walk into this house, I'm going to be the only person in my community. This is before I walked into the house. And I was like, you don't have to confirm that or not. I'm telling you, that's what it's how it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, wow, I will bring that, you know, forward to the producers. But like, even me just saying it to this person who was hired to help, you know, explain to me DE&I as it came to reality TV casting, was flabbergasted when I said, do you know this applies to me?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, wow. He was like, got me there.
Do you have any idea of why that hasn't been thought about? Why that isn't something that crosses people's minds on from behind the scenes that are making these decisions?
Yeah, I mean, I think, there is something to do with maybe the potential of hooking up or the potential of love happening on TV. I think, you know, Julie Chen loves to say that Big Brother has made more lasting marriages than The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, which is true. But why not allow it to be a gay marriage? You know what I'm saying? Like, why not? Because they very specifically source single people looking for love for the show. And they say, what's your type? And then they try to put that type in the house with you.
Because they want the hookups.
They want the hookups, but they don't want gay hookups. I think that's a lot for the audience. Even me and Zach cuddling, like, we were completely platonic on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was a lot for some viewers. But I also think it broke boundaries. And I think it changed viewers' hearts and minds. So we got to just fucking do it.
Yeah, well, because I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's like, it was probably a lot for a lot of viewers, but also I think people glommed onto that idea of you guys being a quote-unquote showmance, even though you weren't technically a showmance.
Ago.
Right. So, but I think that's a really accurate assessment of why, of, because I think about, for example, on Bravo, there's a show called Summer House. The first two seasons had one gay guy. And he's no longer, they haven't had an openly LGBTQ person since then. And it's this back and forth in my mind of like, I would love to see another queer person on that show. But also, one, you risk having the tokenization again of one person. And two, you're also like, is this environment even like for queer people? You know what I mean? It's like, it's this weird thing. I don't know. I think about a lot of different shows in that way because it's as a gay person, I want to see that, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it's fun. And it's like interesting, like for Peppermint's point earlier, like I had to code switch when I walked into Big Brother. Like I looked at the people that I'm playing with and I immediately bro out. Like I'm immediately like, yeah, dude, what's up, brah? Let's go, brah. Let's go do this competition, brah. But it worked. I mean, that's how I have to play the game to get to the end. Like I have to because I don't see anyone like me.
Right.
So I'm the silly gay person, which makes people think that I'm not as good at competitions. And when I'm kicking everyone's ass, I bro out. And I'm like, guys, we got to stick together. Big, strong dogs to the end. You know, so like it's more of a mental game for us in the LGBTQ plus community because we're
100%.
Constantly trying to figure out how to relate to people that don't look like us, don't sound like us, aren't part of our everyday circle.
And we end up having to cater to like a this power dynamic. And honestly, I do think that folks fall back on what their normal thing is. If some gay person walks in and you have people of all walks of life, maybe half of them aren't used to seeing a gay person or a queer person or a trans person, certainly not a trans person. We already know that.
Yeah.
Then they're going to probably react the way that they usually react whenever they see a trans person. And just judging by America's reactions right now, it's not very good.
Mm-hmm. And Peppermint, when you hear how Frankie talks about it from his experience in Big Brother, and you think about your time on Traders, like, it was very controversial. You're the first person banished after Trishel accused of being, quote, dramatic, and that was her evidence, quote unquote, against you. When you were having that experience in the moment, were you like, oh fuck, like I shouldn't have been as much myself as I was? Or like, cause it's sort of like, what did you consider at all when you were going through that?
I feel like I was blindsided because, you know, we spent a lot of time, you know, without giving up too much of the process of the show, the episode took a lot longer to film than it looks
I'm
like
sure.
it did. Even though that was one of the first conversations I had in the house. And I didn't mind that as much. I kind of just thought that was nothing. She did make more of it than I was kind of like, what? You're talking about that? But what was even more interesting is how much she was really interested in sort of spinning a tale and really campaigning kind of to get everybody to see it from her side. And it wasn't so much this reaction. That's not what it was. It's that she told people that I stormed off and like pushed her away when she was trying to apologize to me. And that never happened. But that was what convinced everybody else. That didn't make it into the show either. So her story was two pieces. First, Peppermint reacted dramatically. And then when I went up to her to apologize, she pushed me. That is what the people in the house, that's what convinced the people in the house that whatever that I was like, whatever, you know, it was. So it felt more than, they felt like they were defending her against my aggression.
Right, which
not,
is so loaded.
Not that
exactly.
They thought I was actually a traitor, and, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Where the formula is dangerous in a show like Traitors, which is all about finding the other, right? Like, is that, like, if you're already othered by being of a community that no one has, you have no one else in the house that is of your community, and also, like, many of the people in the house are unfamiliar with your community, you're othered. Like, you're othered from
Absolutely.
Day one, from second one, the formula is broken, you're going home first. You
Absolutely.
Know?
Yeah, and in the corresponding video for your letter, you talk about sort of the archetypes and the formulas that sort of, they sort of fuel reality TV. It comes into casting, it comes into how they edit the shows, because it gives viewers something, quote unquote, familiar to latch onto. It's, you know, people play into these archetypes.
Yep.
How do you push past that? To me, a lot of this comes back to casting. Yes. Obviously, editing is a big part of it too. But like, if you have more queer people in the cast in situations like this, how does that change how the experiences of queer people in these shows net out and sort of?
Well, I just did Worst Cooks in America Celebrity Edition, and I walked into the kitchen, and on a team was me, Trinity the Tuck, and Adam Rippon. And I have to tell you, I've never had so much fun and so much queer joy doing a competition show in my whole fucking life. And it just naturally happened. It just happened. You put three flaming homosexuals together and we just were like, and we called ourselves the Gay Agenda. And you watched it at home and you were like, wow, those gay guys are having the best fucking time. And I think that that's all you really need to do. I mean, there is, I guess, a formula to it where it's like, is this guy single? Is he not single? Is he approachable? Is he not approachable? Like all of those different characteristics. But just showing community interactions will familiarize us to an audience that can be like, oh, wow, they are kind of just like us. Even when we're fighting, like I'm not saying it has to be kumbaya. Like I might go for another gay guy's throat. You know what I'm saying? Peppermint and I might be snatching each other's weaves and throwing them across the fucking room. But the point is like it familiarizes our community to people who are like, actually, I fight like that with my sister. Mm-hmm. Like, holy shit, they're just like us. So I just think it's including more people. It doesn't have to be a thought way beyond that. It's just like having like maybe four. You imagine like four LGBTQ plus people in one house, a big brother of 16. That'd be sick.
Right. Well, even on the Traitors this season, Peppermint, we had more people. And like, I think about like, I mean, we had Chriselle and Gabby in an alliance together. They're both women who like were actually introduced to America as they identified as straight when we first got to know them. And now they are both queer. And like, they were in an alliance together. There was something a little bit like revolutionary. Yes. That's a big word, but like it felt,
I mean,
cool
it,
sh- to
it
see
shouldn't
that,
be,
but it felt cool
yeah, it
to
shouldn't
see
be it. So revolutionary, but my thinking is past the casting. I mean, I wasn't even at that point of like, who can I have an alliance with? My thinking was, if they say you only have 2 minutes to change into your bathing suits and I'm the only one who has to tuck,
then that's crazy.
Like, am I going to lose?
Come on.
So right. I'm thinking in the production, like what, what happens if every none of the ladies want to get their hair wet, but if I jump in and I lose my hair, what does that say to America about who I really am? Mm-hmm. In a country where they're in Texas, they're making it a felony to be trans on the grounds of being fraudulent. Mm-hmm. What does it say if my gender changes before your eyes, right, according to them? Do you know what I mean? And so that's where
I
was.
Yeah, of course.
And
of
I said, I didn't want to be the only trans person on the set. And I said, I know you can't tell me who the other cast members are, but maybe we could have one other trans person on the set to defend me off camera, from off camera.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
To say, actually, this is actually not a moment that will work well for everyone in the cast. Mm-hmm. Could we think of a different way to do this that isn't harmful to trans people?
Right.
You know, and to their credit, like, they did have someone who is trans come to the set. And that was great, you know?
And you felt like that person advocated for you based on their own lived experience, which is amazing.
It's very intimidating on a reality TV competition show to advocate for yourself. It's scary. Right. 'Cause you're like, are the producers going to like get me out sooner? Are they going to do something? Are they going to do that or the other? So it is beautiful that they actually brought somebody to advocate for you, because it's very hard to advocate for yourself in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's scary.
Another thing that I loved about the letter is that it talks obviously about what we all know, which is representation matters. But I also liked that it talked about how seeing queer people on these shows creates familiarity with people who might not otherwise be exposed to a trans person or a queer person, or that, mm-hmm. that to me is sort of the next level that people don't really think about all the time. You know what I mean? Cause we a lot of us know that representation matters, and it still does, but like that is the next level to me that I'm glad you two mentioned in your letter. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Again, like as a kid, getting to not see many queer people on reality TV, it is just, it's just important as we go into these next 4 years where we are so, mm-hmm. our community is being so villainized and so attacked, that you get to see us just being normal people on television, like just getting to interact in Kiki and Kai Kai. And it's like, we are going backwards. So this is a really good time for this letter to be out in the world, because I do feel like reality TV is speaking to those people, like to the people mm-hmm. on the fence. I have fans who are Trump supporters. Like I know that because I've met them and they're Trump supporters and they love me and they love what I did on Big Brother. So it's just that simple of having more people like us on TV to have those experiences and also showing us as a community relate to each other. That's the big piece that I think that people aren't like, they're like, what do you mean? There's plenty of people on gay people on reality TV. Sure. But do we get to see community on these shows? Because that's right. really the way to change hearts and minds, really to show right. how we take care of each other.
I also think it also shows people how to treat us and not treat us, because I think one of the what did we see? If it's not even a reality competition show, if you think of a gay person that's the lone gay on the show, they're usually somebody's hairdresser or somebody's gay best friend that's like in service to everyone else.
Right.
No one is in service of them. No one is wondering about their needs. No one is taking care of them or checking in on them. And so that's what America learns about who queer people are. And then what's beyond that, you know, I mean, I would like to think of shows like, you know, Jerry Springer as sort of reality TV shows.
Yeah.
In terms of the trans community, you know, a lot of times the first time a person saw, for many people, their first introduction to trans people was through shows like the Jerry Springer Show.
Right.
Where a trans person, usually a trans woman, would get on stage and profess her love for someone who would turn around and hit her upside the head with a chair.
Mm-hmm.
So they're learning how to treat that is appropriate response, right. violence. I can't separate the fact that the trans community is falling victim to a lopsided rate of violence and murder right now, not to be so dark, but like that is it's a very real thing. People, we can 100%. Connect how people treat us from what they see about us, given that most people don't know trans people and you know, a lot of people probably know somebody who's queer at this point, but like they learn how to interact with us based on what they see on TV.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Amen. God, I love you, Peppermint. Fuck.
but that ties in your experience on The Traitors very well, especially hearing more to the story that you just shared. Like that's emblematic of it 100%. And so I'm really glad that you mentioned that. I guess going off of that is like, you talked about sort of the gay character always sort of being the sidekick or the hairdresser or what have you. Mm-hmm. The sort of next level up from that is like, okay, maybe they're more of a main character, but their primary storyline is just like their coming out story. We don't really get to know them beyond that. The first confessional breakthrough moment is always like, all right,
trauma.
When you told your parents, and it's always through tears, and it's always, that's always how we get to know the gay person or the queer person on any of these shows. And it's like, I love hearing those stories because they are relatable for us. But I want to take 2, 3, 4 steps beyond that with these people. And it's, I guess it also, it gets into like how long people last on the shows, but it's, that to me is a frustration because it's, we're more than just our coming out stories and our trauma, like you said, Frankie. You know?
Yes, exactly. And I do also think that you can cast people that will be good at the things that the show wants. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think even in reality TV, like they know who's going to go home in what order. Like, not really, not actually. Like, I will tell you, there's no producer involvement in Big Brother. But like, I think when they're casting it, they're like, okay, this person's good at puzzles. This person's not. This person's strong. This person has endurance. So like, they can kind of tell just based on who you are, how far you're going to go in the show. So cast queer people that you think can get to the end. Mm-hmm. You know, that is part of the thing, you know, like, let's be like, wow, this guy is really well-rounded and happens to be a flaming homosexual. Let's throw him in there, you know, with another one. And they're both single. That's crazy. What could happen? Would they kiss in the shower? You know who does it?
Kiss in that shower, honey.
Yeah. You know who does it great is the challenge. The challenge does it great. Like, it is, there's so many queer people on that show and they're hooking up and it doesn't matter and they're fun and they support each other and they don't and they fight and it's great. There's always 40 people on the show.
Right.
So it helps.
There's more. I feel like Survivor also does a fairly good job of being a little bit more representative in a variety of ways, but I feel like another big cast is
helpful for sure. And the problem with Survivor is that they're always separated. You know what I'm saying? By the time you get to the merge, you're down to 10. So it's like very hard to figure out whether or not those two gay people, like, it doesn't necessarily mean there will be community. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. Totally.
Because there's 5, 5, and 5. And so if there's one gay on here and one gay on here and one gay on here, then they don't get to interact. But anyway, yes, the more the merrier. The point of please, we'll take anything we can get is what I'm saying. And there are some shows that are doing it right, like The Challenge. I think The Challenge is doing it right. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's just like, you know, getting those other big tent poles shows to make this commitment and know why they're doing it. I think that's the thing. Like, I think that's really the big part of this letter is like, I don't think anyone ever, like, that meeting that I had with Big Brother just sticks in my head. Like, I don't think people understood that there was a problem. And I think that we just want them to understand that there is a problem. Like, yes, we're glad that you addressed, and Big Brother at least, that you were glad that there's now an equal ratio of people of color to white people. Like, that is phenomenal. But there is still another problem that needs to be addressed. And I think that everyone across the board just needs to be aware of it. And now we have, Peppermint and I, along with Glad, made sure that they can't say we didn't know that was happening.
Right.
Now they know this is happening, so now they have to do something, period. Mm-hmm. And just be intentional.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Just be intentional when it comes to our community. That's all the two of us are begging for.
It's not even necessarily that we need something. Of course, we would like this, but I wholeheartedly believe that the other people, certainly the viewers, but even the other people in the house, in the room, in the show or whatever,
island.
They will benefit on the island. They will benefit from having relationships with queer people. Like, it's not just so much definitely. Like, oh, we're poor queer people. Just do something for them so they'll shut up. It is like their lives could be enriched by a relationship, an interaction, a connection with someone who is out and queer and who has gone through the type of adversity that queer people have to go through these days, that many queer people do go through these days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I became best friends with Caleb Reynolds, who is a staunch Trumper, and he was on that show, and he was like, a country boy, and he's just like, wow, Frankie. And he's like, I didn't ever think I'd be cuddling in bed with somebody like Frankie, but I did, and we're friends. And it's like, yes. That's it. Like,
expose
like Caleb forever. Like, we'll be like, I know a gay guy and he's pretty great.
And I'm sure there's a lot of people watching who
relate to him.
By that. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. A little bit of a different idea, but I'm curious, as somebody who watches a lot of Bravo, a lot of like the sort of docu-soap reality shows, not the competition ones, There have been sort of attempts to have queer, gay
versions.
Yes, exclusively with casts full of just queer people. But none of them have lasted. None of them have really gone the distance. They either last for a couple seasons, one season, or like they're kind of shunned before they even get to air. Honestly, I'm thinking about that MTV show from a couple years. Why do you two think that is? Like, what's not being unlocked for a success to happen there?
That's going to the extreme opposite. You know, like, we don't want to go from like one queer person to 30. Like, we just want to exist within a group of varying types of people, but in a way that makes us feel represented. You know, I think that that's the problem. I think, like, I think it's too extreme, honestly, because you still want to get those middle American people to watch the show. And if there's 20 queer people on the show, that's it. They're not going to watch. They don't care. It's still about
that viewership. Yeah, I think it's one thing to be like, here, just give something for the gay people. But I think it's the difference between the significance of having, you know, a network like BET, for example, that, you know, I mean, I watched a lot of BET shows, but I don't know how many white folks watched it,
right,
you know, versus having us come into the living room, us queer people, people of color, different type, people with different abilities, disabled people.
Yep.
Coming into their living room on a show that they are already watching. And so the way to do that is to mix us into the fabric of what they're already consuming, not trying to convince them to go and watch something on Logo. You know what I mean?
And I feel like eventually, hopefully, I mean, I think this is the first thing that we can do, but the next frontier, I hope, is a show like that for us to, even if it is just for the millions and millions of queer people in this country to watch, and even if it's just us, I hope that we eventually get that.
Yeah, we need a gay Love is Blind. Like, why the fuck not?
Or even just like without the dating, just or without the sort of structure. Just like, I just want to watch people.
Yeah, why can't it just be people there? Maybe
why can't we just follow people in Hell's Kitchen and it's called a day? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But also, gay Love is Blind, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure.
I mean,
I'll take it all. I'm not. Exactly.
Queer Love is Blind.
To wrap it up here, I mean, you put this letter out. And you have some incredible names that signed this letter that really have gotten behind this effort. Alan Cumming, Phaedra Parks, Meredith Marks, T.S. Madison, Bob the Drag Queen, Elliot Page, Chriselle Staus. A lot of heavyweights in this genre have gotten behind this publicly, like you said. This is out there. It's pretty unmissable now. That must feel pretty good. That must feel like you have already, honestly, done part of the job, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess we'll see what the response is. And that'll warm my heart to see that the message has been received. Mm-hmm. I'm happy that we sent such a beautiful message, and it does speak a lot to me. I was hesitant to reach out to a couple of the people that we were, you know, talking to, and you know, because I wasn't sure. You know, you never know who's going to be receptive to this type of message or not.
And totally,
it is great to see so many people supporting it. And it, next would be, you know, the people who this is addressed to.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they respond in kind.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Amen. Well said.
And to end it on here, I know that people can sign the petition themselves. There's a way for viewers to also make their voice heard in this. How can people do that? Because I already did that before we started our conversation. But how can people listening to this or watching this get involved?
It's easy. They can go to glad.org/reality and
sign.
Sign them.
Put your name on there.
Yeah. Your name. Exactly. I think it really is about the viewers. I think it is. That's the only way that this is going to change, is if they understand that this is what their viewership would like to see.
Right.
So please, please sign away if you are someone who loves reality TV and wants to see more of our community shown there. I think that's the biggest way to make a change, is to hit them where their eyeballs are.
And listen, this is exclusively a show pretty much about reality TV. So people listening to this, I know they're interested. So I really appreciate you two coming on here. Thanks for all the work you're doing. It means a lot to have you both doing this. And hopefully we see some change.
Yeah. I want to do a show with you, Pep. Let's go.
Honey, we got to. Oh, I can't wait for that moment.
Next season of Amazing Race. Thank you.
Yeah, hello.
Talk about community. Let's go.
Bye, you guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.